All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is a bitter cold, January 21st, 2026. And our top stories this morning are both commodities related. And I know that's not going to disappoint any of you guys. This channel, we tend to have a commodity-centric audience, and I know this is one of your favorite topics. So let's start with a shiny one, shall we? Gold, $4,800 an ounce for gold, up nearly $300 in just a matter of 2 days. And guys, you know, I said $4,800 gold in the title. We blew right through $4,800. We're actually threatening $4,900, maybe even before the end of this stream. Gold is ripping here. And I am just delighted to see that, to be honest with you, not just because I own gold and, you know, I don't have a gold bar here to flash, but I do have a gold back. I'm not a big fan of gold backs. They tend to be very high premium, but this was a gift from David Morgan, who's a really nice guy. Thank you, David. Shout out to the silver guru, Mr. Morgan. That being said, I'd like to see gold ripping here because we've been watching silver go up in a vacuum in a straight line. And I'd like to see silver. Let's flash the other shiny. I got my Murica silver bar here. I've been enjoying watching silver go up in a straight line, but I've been a little bit worried. I don't like to see precious metals trading like meme stocks. I'd like to see them going up slow, methodically, steadily over time, up into the right diagonal, not up in a straight line. That tells me they're probably just going to come back down in a straight line. But gold playing catch up to silver gives me that confidence that maybe silver is just recoiling that spring, recharging the batteries for the next move higher as gold plays catch up. So why is gold ripping this morning? Well, take your pick. Maybe it's Greenland. Everybody seems to be like, oh, the U.S. and Europe are going to war over Greenland. No, they're not. But they're certainly talking like they are. And it's stupid. It's just the silliest story in the world right now. Maybe Greenland is why gold is ripping. Maybe Japan is why gold is ripping. Maybe it's the risk of the AI bubble has people running for safety. Maybe it's the fact that the Fed nonchalantly started not QE, printing money again. What did they call it? They called it reserve management purposes. Ah, the RMP, the Royal Mounted Police. Sure, why not? We'll call it what you want. Anything but money printing at the Fed. Maybe that's why gold is ripping. Maybe it's worries about Fed independence, which is a joke because like, oh yeah, President Trump can't fire the Fed and replace him with somebody who's going to lower rates and print money. No. What is the people currently in there doing? Lowering rates and printing money. Oh, yeah, but my Fed independence, that's so important. Who are we kidding here, guys? There's a million different reasons to buy gold, and I say it all the time on this channel. There just isn't enough gold in the world for what's coming, and we'll talk about some of that what's coming later on in the show. The other big commodity story going on this morning is natural gas. Beware the Widowmaker trade. It is back, and it is ripping back this morning. Natural gas, Henry Hub futures in the United States up more than 50% in 2 days. Yikes. 50% in 2 days. Biggest spike in 35 years for natural gas futures, at least on a percentage basis. We have got a bitter, ridiculous cold. It's already ridiculously cold out, and it's getting ridiculouslier colder out over the next few days. The polar vortex, everybody's going to be an expert on, you know, stratospheric flows for the next few days. We've seen this before. All I can tell you is I went out yesterday to the chicken coop to set up the heat lamp for my ladies, and my hands were throbbing for like 20 minutes after I came inside, after just a couple minutes outside running a wire and a heat lamp out for the birds. Man, it sucks outside. Shout out to all the guys who make a living working outside, man. I tell you, on a hot day in the summer or whatever, that is hard work. To be out there in this, no thank you. Been there, done that. Days like today, I'm glad I sit behind a desk. That's all I can tell you. Okay, so what else is going on? By the way, that is the Widowmaker trade. Be careful if you're tempted to chase natural gas futures here. Just Google, why is natural gas the Widowmaker trade, and you'll see why. Also, Japan's bond market. That was a big story yesterday. They're rebounding today. They took an absolute bludgeoning yesterday, these long-term Japanese government bonds. The finance ministry is out there trying to jawbone markets and restore calm. And basically what I've been able to detect based on the language being thrown around is that the Japanese believe the Japanese central bank, the BOJ, is going to make significant purchases of Japanese government bonds at some point in order to stop this rout in the bond market. And see also gold breaking $4,800, right? Japan is supposed to be getting out of this ridiculous experiment in modern monetary theory and the direct monetization of government debt. How's that working out for you? They raised interest rates from like negative a little bit to nothing point nothing, and their bond market is melting down, and they're already talking about buying more Japanese government bonds. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. We've got the Danish pension fund is dumping U.S. treasuries. It's a paltry amount, $100 million of U.S. treasuries in the Danish pension fund. But they say it's got nothing to do with Greenland. It's all about the reckless finances of the United States government. And hey, look, I'll be the first one to jump on the bandwagon of the reckless finances of the U.S. government. But who are we kidding, Denmark? It's not the reckless finances of the U.S. government. You're throwing a fit over Greenland. You just can't say that because that's telling your pensioners we are using your future financial stability as a political plaything in our tit for tat with Mr. Orange across the pond. And well, the optics of that kind of sucks. So you're just going to be like, no, it's the reckless government finances. All right, what are you going to do? You're going to buy German bunds with that money? Oh, yes, much more fiscal stability and responsibility over in Europe, right? See also gold at $4,800. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. What else we got going on this morning? We've got Netflix earnings. It was a beat, but the stock is down big because they are forecasting weak margins for the next few quarters here. Looks like Netflix finds themselves in something of a rebuilding year. Stranger Things has run its course. That's like the marquee show on Netflix, so they're going to have to reinvest in content over the next few quarters. Also, they're raising cash for their now all-cash bid for Warner Brothers Discovery. That may or may not happen. And they have announced that they're canceling stock buybacks in order to raise that cash. All those things combined means Netflix is taking a beating ahead of the opening bell. That's putting some downward pressure on tech stocks. We had some interesting comments from Satya Nadella over at the World Economic Forum in Davos. By the way, does anybody know what kind of mealworms they're serving in Davos this week? I mean, they're leading by example, right? They're eating the bugs. Oh, that's right. You don't hear jack shit about climate anymore from the World Economic Forum, do you? Because they went from eat the bugs and ride roller skates to work because climate to we need to burn all the coal, all the oil, all the gas, and a few virgins in order to power data centers for our chatbots. Yeah, a noticeable shift in the rhetoric over at World Economic Forum. But Satya Nadella is saying that energy costs will determine who wins the AI race. See also nothing about, you know, oh, we're going to tax energy and the carbon footprint and all that other bullshit about the climate. Yeah. No, now we need cheap energy because my chatbots. He also says that AI risks becoming a speculative asset bubble without wider adoption. Yeah, we wouldn't want AI to become a speculative asset bubble. Glances over at the NASDAQ. Yeah, we wouldn't want that to happen. Look, Satya Nadella, the company that is a major owner of OpenAI, the company that pretty much built the AI bubble, just keeps saying bubble, keeps saying I'm more power constrained versus chip constrained. How much longer are we going to keep buying these GPUs that if we can't plug them in? At some point, it's going to happen, right? But I guess this is where I should say full disclosure. I'm personally short NVIDIA because I think that's any day now. Also, speaking of the wider adoption of Copilot and wider adoption of AI, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal about a very big gap between the perceptions of AI productivity increases between members of the C-suite, you know, the guys making all the promises about AI and how awesome it's going to be, and everybody else, the people who have to use these tools and clean up all the work slop that gets generated because of it, a big gap over how much productivity is actually being saved or wasted, depending on who you ask. We also got earnings from United Airlines. The upper K of the economy continues to do very well at the expense of the lower K. Shout out to my friend Lox Ganapathy, who called that one in our interview just a few weeks ago from Unicus Research. Check that one out in the channel feed. And an interesting story that my moderator, Mish, found about Berkshire Hathaway is dumping their stake and Kraft Heinz. Kraft Heinz, it was a merger that didn't go so well a couple of years ago. Berkshire invested in the company. Now they're splitting the company in two. Berkshire doesn't like that, so they're selling it. But that's interesting. Those are the kind of names, I think, for what's coming. It's not as flashy. It's not as exciting as, oh, my quantum computing stocks and my biotech that is going to cure cancer or go to zero within the next week. It's not as exciting as that. But those are the kind of names you want to look out for over the next few months as the world enters or continues to be in this recession that we've been in since 2022. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on. I hit the music again because that's the wrong button. Jack, get your head in the game this morning. It's just one of those mornings, guys. It's really cold. Anyways, hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button, you new guys. Come have your coffee with the Melonheads. We do this every single day. Blah, blah, blah. All that good stuff. The S&P 500 right now. Oh, what happened? Trump must have said a thing at Davos. I don't know what it is, but we were in the negative just a few moments ago. And then all of a sudden, we had some green shoots started, what's this, about 20 minutes ago, coinciding with the president's address in Davos. I'm having a hard time understanding what Donald Trump could possibly have said that the Europeans liked. But this bump in S&P futures does coincide with the beginning of that speech. Let me know in the comments, guys, what it was that sent markets up here right around 8:45, 8:50 a.m. Eastern time. But for now, the S&P, 27 points in the green, 0.4% higher. We've got the Dow is up 80 points, 0.16% higher. That's after falling 870 points yesterday. It was a rough day for the Dow, clawing back some of that this morning. Again, all in the last few minutes. And the NASDAQ is doing the same thing, up 75 points. All in the last couple of minutes here, 0.3% higher after shedding 561 points yesterday. And my chart is not prepared. There we go. The DXY is down 5 basis points, slightly weaker dollar this morning, although an insignificant amount, 98.50 for the dollar. Looking over at the bond market, we are a lot quieter than we were just a couple of days ago. The 30-year yield, 4.929. That's actually up almost 1 basis point this morning. The 10-year, meanwhile, is down a point and change at 4.283%. The 2 years at 3.582, off by a point and a half. And the 1 month is at 3.665, down by just a half a point. Looking over at Bitcoin, it was a rough day for the Bitcoiners yesterday. We dropped about 4,000 from 92 and change down to 88 and change. We got about 1,000 of that back here. It's currently trading at 89,435 as priced on Coinbase. And once again, all the action is on the commodities board this morning. Look at gold, $4,846, just off the highs of the morning. We went as high as $48.90 for February COMEX futures. Currently up $82, 1.75% higher. Spot gold is right behind it at $48.47. That's up 84 bucks or 1.75%. Spot silver is taking a breather this morning, back in the red, $94.24. That's down by about 35 cents or 0.38%. March COMEX silver futures, $94.16. That's down by about 44 cents or 0.5%. Silver, due for a breather here, but you know what? I still like the shiny. Copper is higher by 0.4% this morning. Platinum is up 1%. Palladium is down 1%. Crude oil off by a quarter of a percent, $60.22 for March WTI futures. The big move again this morning, though, guys. Look at this move in natural gas. 479 for natural gas futures delivered in February. Up another 22.7% this morning. Nearly 50% increase in natural gas futures over just the last 2 days. We'll have more to say about gas in just a minute. But here's the big story this morning. Let's see what Reuters is saying about why gold is ripping here this morning. Gold powers above $4,800 as global risks fan record safe haven rally. And it is a record safe haven rally. It was risk off yesterday, and people were leaving the bond market and running to gold. And I do think that flight from bonds into gold is the biggest bull case for gold. And it's not just going to be over the next few days. This is over the next few years. I think this will continue to play out. Gold prices extended their record run to breach the $4,800 per ounce level on Wednesday on safe haven flows driven by escalating friction between the United States and NATO over Greenland. All right, so Greenland is why gold went ripping yesterday. Let's see, what else do they have to say here? Okay, meanwhile, investors are looking out for the Supreme Court's verdict on the legality of Trump's bid to remove Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, adding to concerns over Fed independence. Oh, yes, my Fed independence. We are looking for gold to punch through $5,000 an ounce as investors continue to seek inflation-proof safe haven assets, said SP Angel analyst John Mayer, adding that upward momentum could fade as ETF buying tails off. I agree with John Mayer. I do think we're on autopilot to 5,000 here. Look, this Reuters article makes no mention of Japan. I'm having a hard time believing that what happened in Japan yesterday didn't play a major role in gold. I know everybody's like, oh, Orange Man bad. Greenland is the reason why everything now in the world is happening, as if we're already invading Greenland. We're not. And don't worry, the Europeans sent like 25 troops to Greenland yesterday to reinforce the island. I heard half of them already left. But, you know, in their defense, they were thwarted by a particularly assertive gate agent who was working at the airport that day. So they were thrown back into the sea. That being said, guys, we're not about to fight over Greenland. I mean, I know the rhetoric is what it is, but think about all this stupid shit this guy says and then never does. We're not going to invade Greenland. That being said, the Danish are not sitting around and waiting. The Danish pension fund to sell $100 million in treasuries, citing poor U.S. government finances. Yes, that's what changed over the last 2 days. Over the last 2 days, U.S. government finances became poor. It certainly has nothing to do with Greenland, and that's why the Danish pension fund is selling $100 million in pension in U.S. treasuries in their pension. Danish pension operator, oh my God, should I try to pronounce this? Akademiker Pension. Did I say it right? The Danish operator, A Pension, we'll call it, said it is exiting U.S. treasuries because of finance concerns as Denmark spars with President Trump over his threats to take over Greenland. Anders Schild, A Pension's investing chief, said the decision was driven by what it sees as poor U.S. government finances amid America's debt crisis. But it also comes as tensions escalate between the U.S. and Denmark after Trump's latest threats to tariff European countries if Greenland, an Arctic territory of Denmark, isn't sold to the United States. I think that's about all we have. Okay, yeah, sure. It's about the poor U.S. government finances. Have you seen the government finances in Europe, by the way? Yeah, about that. Look, there's just another reason why there's not enough gold in the world for what's coming, guys, because the Danish pension fund selling U.S. treasuries because of a geopolitical spat, whether it's the bad finances or Greenland or whatever it is. We know it's Greenland. They're selling U.S. treasuries. All right, that's going to put upward pressure on bond yields. That is going to have the Danish pension fund looking for another safe place to put their money. Where are they going to put it? In German government bonds? Yeah, right. That's even worse. They're going to put it in gold. Of course they are. And, you know, let's take a look at what gold's doing here. 48.50. Guys, I mean, daily candles here. That is just a monster move over the span of 2 days. Up almost $300, more closer to $250 higher over the last 2 days here for gold, still riding this trend that we've been in for the last couple of months. And the gold to silver ratio is back at a slightly higher 51.49, even after this big rip in gold the last 2 days. Gold to silver ratio still heavily favoring silver, in my opinion, at 51.5. A lot of guys talking about trading silver for gold, something I've been talking about doing for a while. I just haven't gotten around to doing. Consider doing that at this level here. Also affecting the move in gold over the last few days was this article here about Japan. Japan's long bonds rebound after finance chief calls for market calm. Yeah, everybody calm down. And that's why Japanese government bonds, right? Never in the history of calm down has anybody ever actually calmed down when told to calm down. But apparently some guy said calm down and the bond market obeyed. Well, I mean, there's cultural differences between my own persona and that in Japan. So maybe there's just a cultural barrier here preventing me from understanding this one. But Japan's longer maturity bonds rebounded in a volatile market, with investors voicing concerns that the government and central bank may need to do more to calm the surge in yields. Oh, there we go. The government and the central bank. It's not because they said calm down. It's because everybody's like, sooner or later, we know they're going to print money and buy these bonds. And that's why I'll calm down. The country will hold a snap election on February 8th, fueling worries there will be more wild swings ahead and keeping yields near historic highs. The yield on the 40-year tenor stayed above 4%, even after a drop of 17 basis points on Wednesday. The slide in stocks deepened, and the yen, the worst performing G10 currency so far this year, hovered around 158 against the dollar. The Bank of Japan went ahead with bond buying operations as planned on Wednesday, while Democratic Party for the People leader Yuichiro Tamaki said the government and the central bank should take a firm response to the excessive moves. He suggested considering buying back government debt and reducing the issuance of 40-year bonds as possible further action. Well, Gorse, that sounds an awful lot like yield control, doesn't it? Oh, yikes. There is an anticipation that the Ministry of Finance will either survey primary dealers or bring forward reductions in next fiscal year's super long bond issuance, said Ryutaro Kimura, a senior fixed income strategist at AXA Investment Managers. Many market participants expect the BOJ to make extraordinary purchases of government bonds, but this will depend on whether the government tolerates the resulting yen depreciation. Oh, okay. In other words, more modern monetary theory, more QE, more central banks printing money and buying bonds in order to allow reckless government policies. Yeah, okay. And see also gold at $4,800. Guys, there's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. And look, the Japanese bond market here, you can see that rebound. We had that big, big green candle yesterday. Market has somewhat calmed down after being told to calm down, but only gave back about half of those gains in yield, or I should say recovered about half of their losses from yesterday. Japanese 40-year JGB still sitting at 4.077 after rising as high as 4.24 yesterday. And the Japanese yen, again, some people were out there yesterday saying this is the unwind of the yen carry trade. Just to reiterate, guys, the Japanese yen has barely moved over the last 2 days. This is not the unwind of the carry trade. The yen would be strengthening. We'd see this chart moving down in a big way if the yen carry trade was unwinding. Not the case here. We would be seeing a surge in Japanese borrowing costs, but we would also be seeing a decline in the USD-JPY chart, and we're not seeing that. All right, the other big commodity story this morning, U.S. natural gas jumps over 50% this week as freeze takes hold. Beware the Widowmaker trade, guys, and stay warm. It is going to be a nasty couple of days. U.S. natural gas futures gained more than 50% in 2 days, with freezing temperatures taking hold of swaths of the country and lifting demand for heating. Contracts are on track for their biggest weekly gain in over 35 years. An Arctic cold front is set to bring cold temperatures to much of the eastern U.S. by the end of the week, according to the U.S. National Weather Service, which has warned of life-threatening wind chills. Funds turned more bearish on gas at the end of last week, leaving the market poised for a short-covering rally. Cold weather is causing energy prices to surge across the globe. Japan's power price rose to a three-month high on Wednesday, and European gas futures are up 29% so far this month. Markets are monitoring for potential weakening of the polar vortex winds that could bring more freezing temperatures. Snow is forecast for Texas this weekend, where important gas production sites are located, significantly raising the chance of temporary outages and lower exports. Guys, it's going to be miserable, miserable cold in the U.S. Be careful, be safe. Be careful in the Widowmaker trade here. As fast as they rise, the futures drop once the forecast shows weather is about to warm. So I'm going to be watching this with my popcorn. I won't be participating in this trade. Good luck to anybody who's trying, though. And also, I would just point out, this is going to be a test for the power grid, right? The last time we had a big deep freeze in Texas, things didn't go so well for Texas. Did they fix their grid, or did they build a whole bunch of data centers, making their load problems even worse while totally neglecting the supply end of the problem? I think we know what the answer is. Good luck, Texas. I hope you guys got a wood-burning fireplace. Also, Northern Virginia, pay attention there. Data center capital of the world. They are in the bullseye of this cold spell. And also keep an eye on New England, where the perfect storm of just idiotic energy policy has created a situation where New England, despite only being a few miles away from an ocean of natural gas in the Marcellus and Utica shale, still somehow has to import their liquefied natural gas from Trinidad and Tobago because of stupid policy after stupid policy. So get ready for some astronomically high energy bills in New England if you're from that part of the country. Take a look at the natural gas chart, guys. Again, more than 50% jump in just 2 days. Look at that one. But again, as soon as we see this thing rise, Widowmaker trade takes you right back down at some point. We could rise another 50% from here, or we could plummet in the next few minutes. Just be careful, guys. All right, let's see what's going on with Netflix earnings. The stock is falling. This is overshadowing the streamer's earnings beat. It was actually a pretty good quarter for Netflix, but there's some bad things in their guidance there and some things moving forward that has investors disappointed this morning. Netflix issued softer than expected margin guidance late Tuesday, overshadowing higher fourth quarter earnings than expected. Shares were tumbling after the closing bell. The video streamer reported a fourth quarter profit of 56 cents a share as revenue climbed almost 18% from a year ago to $12.05 billion. Analysts were looking for 55 cents a share on revenue of $11.97 billion. So it was a beat on the top and bottom line. Netflix is forecasting full year 2026 revenue of 50.7 to 51.7 at the midpoint of that range. It would be above the $51 billion the street was expecting. So far, so good. But the company is predicting an operating margin of 31.5%. That is well below the 32.6% figure that analysts had forecast. Netflix said its call includes about $275 million of expenses related to its acquisition of Warner Brothers Discovery streaming and studio assets. The company is also pausing share buybacks as it seeks to build up its cash pile to fund the Warner deal. The big disappointment in terms of the numbers is just on the margin guidance. That's a little bit short of expectations, so you probably have slight negative earnings estimate revisions, said Gabelli Funds portfolio manager John Belton. Content investment cycles for this business are going to kind of ebb and flow in multi-year periods, and we're probably entering a period of slightly higher content investment, he added. Netflix stock not looking so hot this morning, down 5.2%, trading at $82.55, off by $4.50 on earnings. Guys, so far earnings season, although we have had more beats than misses in earnings by a pretty wide margin, the market has not rewarded these earnings beats. The general move after earnings has been down for the market so far. I mean, we've only seen bank earnings and now Netflix and a couple of other ones. Similar move in J&J this morning. That's a name that I own. They're moving lower on what was otherwise a pretty good quarter. So the market seems not impressed with earnings so far. Meanwhile, we've got this whole AI bubble thing going on, and we've also got the World Economic Forum going on, and energy costs will decide which countries win the AI race, according to Microsoft's Nadella. And I would just add that there's no such thing as an AI race, all right? It's only a race if two people are participating, and right now the United States are the only ones that are running, right? We're racing against ourselves to see how much money we can burn. Energy costs will be key to deciding which country wins the AI race, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said. By the way, see also that prior article about natural gas futures up 50% in a few days. But I'm sure that's irrelevant to the topic at hand. As countries race to build AI infrastructure to capitalize on the technology's promise of huge efficiency gains, Nadella told the World Economic Forum on Tuesday that GDP growth in any place will be directly correlated to the cost of energy in using AI. He pointed to a new global commodity in tokens, basic units of processing, that are bought by users of AI models, allowing them to run tasks. The job of every economy and every firm in the economy is to translate these tokens into economic growth. Then if you have a cheaper commodity, it's better. I would say we will quickly lose even the social permission to actually take something like energy when it's a scarce resource and use it to generate these tokens if these tokens are not improving health outcomes, education outcomes, public sector efficiency, private sector competitiveness across all sectors, Nadella said. Okay, so yeah, basically we'll lose our social permission, whatever that is. I mean, people will be pissed off and they'll start rejecting data centers in their neighborhoods, which is already going on around the country right now, if they don't actually start seeing some benefits from AI. And what benefits are we seeing so far? Nothing. We're being told our jobs are going to be disappeared or outsourced to AI, and we're being bombarded with AI slop. That's about it. That's the only benefit so far. And then Nadella's other warning at the World Economic Forum, AI boom could falter without wider adoption. Microsoft chief Satya Nadella warns. That's actually not what he said. He didn't say the boom could falter. He actually said this. Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella had warned that artificial intelligence risks becoming a speculative bubble unless its use spreads beyond big tech companies and wealthy economies. Mr. Nadella on Tuesday said that the long-term success of the fast-developing technology would depend on it being used by a broad range of industries as well as on uptake outside of the developed world. For this not to be a bubble by definition, it requires that the benefits of this are much more evenly spread, said Mr. Nadella. He noted that a telltale sign of if it's a bubble would be if only tech groups were benefiting from the rise of AI rather than companies in other sectors. So what companies in other sectors are benefiting from AI right now? Yeah, about that. However, Mr. Nadella said he was confident that AI would prove to be transformative across industries, such as helping to develop new drugs, something I keep hearing about. Oh, yeah, AI is going to discover new drugs and new materials. Problem is, after 3 years, it hasn't done any of those things. There have been some fake studies produced by academic frauds claiming that, and then they've been disproven and disavowed. But no, none of that has actually happened yet. But don't worry, Martin Shkreli's working on it. I'm sure that's going to go really well, a thrice-convicted securities fraud. He's going to discover new drugs, even though he was banned for life from working in the pharmaceutical industry. Yeah, it's going to work out great. Don't worry. Microsoft chief's comments came as part of a talk with BlackRock chief Larry Fink on the first day of the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, kicking off the first of several speeches by tech executives, including Google DeepMind chief Sir Demis Hassabis, sure I mispronounced that, and Anthropic's Dario Amodi. A growing body of data from tech companies, including Microsoft, has shown a global divide in AI adoption rates, pointing to productivity benefits and work applications being concentrated in richer developed countries. There haven't been any productivity developments, guys. There just hasn't. And look no further than this article in the Wall Street Journal for that effect. CEO says AI is making work more efficient, but employees tell a different story. You know, the ones actually doing the work, they're the ones telling a different story. That's kind of an important perspective. How much time workers say the technology saves them on the job is vastly different from what executives report. Business leaders' faith in the productivity boosting powers of AI is getting a reality check from their own workforces. Employees said AI isn't saving them much time in their daily work so far, and many report feeling overwhelmed by how to incorporate it into their jobs. Companies, meanwhile, are spending vast amounts on AI, betting that the technology's power to speed everything from sales to back office functions will usher in a new era of efficiency and productivity growth. The gulf between senior executives and workers' actual experience with generative AI is vast, according to a new survey from the AI consulting firm's section of 5,000 white-collar workers. Two-thirds of non-management staffers said they saved less than 2 hours a week or no time at all with AI. While more than 40% of executives, in contrast, said the technology saved them more than 8 hours of work a week. Executives automatically assume AI is going to be the savior, said Steve McGarvey, a user experience designer in Raleigh, North Carolina. I can count the number of times that I've sought a solution for a problem, asked an LLM, and it gave me a solution to an accessibility problem that was completely wrong, he said, referring to a large language model. A new report from the business software company Workday goes so far as to call frustrations with the technology an AI tax on productivity. Read that again, an AI tax on productivity. It's supposed to be the biggest productivity gain in human history, and they're calling it a tax. Though 85% of roughly 1,600 employees it surveyed reported saving 1 to 7 hours a week by using AI, much of that time was offset by having to correct errors and rework AI-generated content, all right? If the work that it generates has to be fixed, then it's not actually doing any work. See also work slop. Shout out to that video I did a couple weeks ago about that one. So yeah, okay, we need wider adoption, even though it doesn't do anything. And the people who told us to eat bugs and ride bicycles to work are saying we need more fuel and more carbon emissions in order to power this thing. Yeah, okay, good luck with your AI bubble, guys. It's going to go great. And speaking of the AI bubble, remember the whole chips thing? Yeah, Secretary Bessent was warning about that one this morning. U.S. warns Taiwan chip concentration risks global economy collapse. And guys, normally I'm a little skeptical of like uber doomer language like this, but this is actually strikingly accurate. The United States has identified Taiwan's overwhelming share of advanced semiconductor manufacturing as the most fragile point in the global economy, warning that a serious disruption could have far-reaching consequences. Addressing the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the concentration of high-end chip production in a single location poses a major strategic and economic risk for global supply chains. Bessent told participants that roughly 90% of cutting-edge chips are produced in Taiwan, describing this imbalance as a single point of failure for the world economy. He argued that any blockade or damage to the island's manufacturing capacity would amount to an economic disaster, underscoring Washington's push to expand semiconductor production inside the United States and to reduce dependence on East Asian supply hubs. Critical minerals and the China factor. The Treasury Secretary also announced efforts to build critical minerals partnerships involving the G7, Australia, India, Mexico, and South Korea. The aim, he said, is to dilute China's influence over mining, processing, and refining of key resources used in high-tech industries. As an example, he pointed to the revival of rare earth magnet production in South Carolina, noting that domestic suppliers expect to meet most of U.S. demand within 2 years. Now, look, here's what's not being said here, guys, about this single point vulnerability, which, by the way, in nuclear terms, you're not allowed to have those. A single point vulnerability is if one thing breaks, the machine stops working. And in this case, that one thing breaking is the Taiwan chip industry, and the machine is the entire global economy. Now, here's what's not being said. All right. Yes, there's almost certainly going to be war over the Taiwan Strait in the next couple of years. And the Chinese may or may not invade. The United States may or may not come to their defense. But here's what's not being said. The United States has contingency plans. Should we opt not to intervene in a Taiwan invasion? The backup plan is to blow up the Taiwanese chip industry. The U.S. military has plans to do this. If we opt not to defend the island, we will blow up the chip fabs and let the Chinese have the island. I'm not advocating that course of events. I'm saying that's the backup plan to World War III right now, is to blow up the factory so nobody could have it. Either way, guys, the chip industry is a single point vulnerability for the entire global economy. See also gold at $4,800. There's just not enough gold in the world for what's coming. True story, by the way. The U.S. military does have plans to do that should the need arise. United Airlines could hit a record earnings after a strong start to 2026. Let's not spend too much time on this because we're getting a little long in the tooth here. United Airlines, upper K doing very well. Premium seating, big growth in that. While the growth in the back of the plane, not doing so well. There's the upper and lower K of the economy. United Airlines stock up 3.8% after posting earnings, $112.76. And another interesting one, Berkshire Hathaway to sell Kraft Heinz shares after split plan. This is kind of interesting. My moderator, Mish, found this one. Berkshire Hathaway may soon sell some or all of its stake in Kraft Heinz just months after the cheese and ketchup maker announced plans to split into two companies. In a filing Wednesday, Kraft Heinz said it's putting the more than 325 million common shares of its largest investor, Berkshire Hathaway, up for a potential sale. Shares in Kraft Heinz fell as much as 5.7% in pre-market trading after the news. Berkshire Hathaway's legendary investor, Warren Buffett, expressed disappointment last year that the company would demerge, even though he had said the combination in 2015 had not gone as planned. Berkshire Hathaway, with about a 28% stake in the company, took a $3.8 billion impairment charge on its investment in the food multinational last year, meaning it had lost a total of $8.4 billion on the company. Kraft Heinz is in the midst of a major overhaul, announcing it would split into two companies about a decade after their $46 billion mega merger. The company appointed a new CEO last month. Its chairman has previously blamed poor performance on its overly complex corporate structure and inability to focus on capital allocation and the right projects to prioritize. Kraft Heinz began a process last year to undo the mega merger, with one company selling its famed Heinz ketchup, condiments, and other boxed foods worth $15.4 billion in annual sales. The other will sell its Oscar Mayer hot dogs and Lunchables, which currently generate revenue of about $10.4 billion. The split should be complete in the second half of this year. So this is pretty interesting here. This stock is way down on this news, off by 6.8%, trading at $22.14. Kraft Heinz also has a pretty high dividend at 6.7%. I don't think that dividend is safe, though, because their payout ratio is over 70%, which means they're probably going to cut their dividend at some point. But look, historically, when you get a breakup, the two daughter companies tend to be worth more separately than as a single combined entity. And a company like Kraft Heinz is big, bloated, and slow. You need to get smaller and leaner in the form of separate companies in order to unlock shareholder value. This is not a name I'm looking to buy right away. I'd be looking for something like a dividend cut and then buy after that dividend gets cut, after the stock drops following that news, because this is the kind of name, consumer staples, that's a good place to hide out and ride out a recession while collecting a dividend. It's not a name I'm going to buy right now, but this is kind of interesting, and I'm kind of surprised to see Berkshire dumping these shares, because typically when you get a breakup, you end up unlocking shareholder value. So maybe Berkshire sees something I can't hear. But that was an interesting story I thought about covering this morning. And I just want to say thank you very much to Front Running the Masses. Says cities may be rebuilt and a people reduced to poverty may acquire fresh property, but a constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever. Look, it's easy to give away. It's not lost forever. It's just really hard to get it back. I agree with the warning there. It's not easily recovered from, but it can be regained. It's just, you know, you can give away your freedom, but then somebody's got to bleed to get it back. That's what sucks about it. Thank you, Front Running the Masses, for supporting the channel. Thousand Dare Radio. Hello, friendo. Shout out to Thousand Dare Radio. That is one of my favorite stacking YouTube channels. Guy likes to flash the metal. Thank you very much, Thousand Dare Radio. Good morning to you, sir. I appreciate the generosity and the support of the channel. Check out Thousand Dare Radio because I like the shiny. Thank you very much, sir. Armando Reyes. Did I say it right today? Armando says everything is absolutely bonkers. Tell me you watch my buddy Travis over at Real Estate Mindset without actually telling me. Everything is absolutely bonkers. And in a world gone mad, the insane asylum of gold is where I choose to reside. And silver, for that matter. I like the shiny. Thank you, Armando, for supporting the channel. PP Poo Poo says, at what price is the average person priced out of metals? Who then is buying when you're stuck trying to survive? I'm rich, so I'm just curious. Well, congratulations on being rich. That makes one of us, Mr. Four Piece. Look, nobody's ever priced out of buying metals. You just have to buy in smaller quantities, right? The thing about metal is it's fungible. It can be shrunken. It can be bought smaller and smaller, smaller increments. Now, they typically premiums get higher the smaller you go. So it does become less economical the smaller and smaller you go. That's why I don't like buying fractional silver or fractional gold. If I'm going to buy fractional anything, it's constitutional silver, 90% junk, which is still very cheap right now, by the way. You can still get 90% constitutional for 3% back of spot in some places because the refiners aren't taking it, which, by the way, if the refiners aren't taking junk silver, it throws a monkey wrench in the whole narrative of the silver shortage. Why are they turning away constitutional silver if there's a shortage of metal? Simple answer, there isn't a shortage of metal. That's why. But my answer is no, the average person never gets priced out. He just gets forced to buy in smaller and smaller increments. And remember, look, even when silver was $20, somebody in 1971 would have said $20 silver prices me out. And then fast forward to 2015, $20 silver looks cheap. Or 2020, $20 silver looks cheap. So it's all relative, Mr. Four Piece. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. There you are, you bonkers SOB, you says Armando for the win. Yep, I thought you would say, oh, well, thank you, Travis. Appreciate the support of the channel. He's also given a strong man to Mr. Nacho Man, Randy Savage. Thank you very much, Travis. Appreciate the support of the channel, brother. He's back again. Travis has just given $2 good mornings to everybody. All right. Travis, thank you, sir, for everything. Check out Real Estate Mindset as well. Hunt and cover. There he is. He says, quit nickel and diming Travis and get Jack some coffee. If you guys want to argue back and forth and pay me every time you get a word in, I can get down with that. I can do this all day. It's your call, guys. Thank you so much for the coffee, Hunt and Cover, and Travis while we're at it. Oh, here we go again. Cheers to Travis. everybody to Travis, a small coffee for Jack. What's a small coffee? That's syntax error. 404 does not compute. Small coffee? I need a gargantuan mug of coffee. I would hook this stuff up to an IV drip if I could. Thanks again, guys, for arguing on my for my benefit. Nacho Man is doing the circular accounting once again. Everything I know about finance, I learned in a CoreWeave 10K filing. Thank you very much, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. We should see Mish any minute now in the memberships. But before that, Indigo Child 99, who's got the Christian Bale as Michael Burry going in the avatar there. He says, what impact will weather have on data centers? We saw an article yesterday that PJM, the biggest grid operator in the country, had basically sent out a memorandum that says new data centers, you're going to have to either build your own power or accept curtailment, which means we'll switch you off if we need to. Now, that was new data centers. I don't know if that applies to existing data centers. I honestly don't know. This cold spell will be a test of a severely weakened U.S. power grid because of this AI buildout. Absolutely. I can see where you're going with this, Indigo. Now, I don't know if the grid operators can throw a switch and cut off the data centers to keep mom's house warm. I don't know if they have that ability or the legality to do it. You would think they would. I just don't know for a fact that they do. Pay attention to Texas. Pay attention to Northern Virginia. Those are the two that are most vulnerable, where we've seen the biggest build out of data centers combined with, especially in Texas, a grid that is highly vulnerable during the winter months. And of course, New England, maybe it's not specifically a data center problem in New England, but New England just suffers from liberalism. And so their power grid is just awful in New England. People are going to be just bled dry by their utility bills in Massachusetts in particular over the next couple of days. Guys, keep warm. Whatever you got to do, just keep warm. Thank you very much, Indigo Child. There's my man, Mish, gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships via round-trip revenue with Nacho Man. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 20 new magnificent Melonheads, you guys. Thank you so much for supporting the channel, Mish and Nacho Man. M&J, thank you for supporting the channel. Says, we have been assured ERCOT is ready. Okay, ERCOT says they're ready. Did they assure us that they were ready last time, back in February of 2021? I don't know if ERCOT assured us back then that they were ready, but all right. Look, if it comes down to a choice between keeping the chatbots running and keeping people from freezing to death and having their pipes burst in the winter, I would hope they turn off the data centers. I don't even know if they're going to be forced to making that choice. I think they will. But ERCOT says they're ready, so maybe they're ready to throw the switch. Thank you, M&J, for that one. Arthur Vandelay, the CEO of Vandelay Industries, where I've always wanted to pretend that I was an architect. He says, friends selling AI written books, short everything. All right. It's not this, it's that. All right. General thing, guys, if you want to be able to tell if something was written by AI, it's not just a book written by AI. It's a crash course in AI slop being marketed as it's authentic human-generated content. That's the way you can tell if AI is writing something. It's a dead giveaway. It's not this. It's that. For whatever reason, the chatbots always write like that. Always. By the way, listen to one of those AG Asian guy slop videos. It's not this. It's that. Da, 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 da. Same thing. Same thing. It's all the same garbage. Thanks, Art. Selling books, short everything. All right. If you want to pay for a book that a chatbot wrote based on a one-line prompt, it's your money. Do what you want with it, folks. Armando's back again, says, what's your outlook on 401ks? What's it Mr. T said in Rocky III when he said, hey, what's your prediction for the fight? Pain. That's my outlook for 401ks. Right now, bag holders wanted. 401ks are being lined up by all the people we pay and trust to run our money for us in order to act as exit liquidity for private equity and private credit, who is desperately pretending to be a bull. It's actually a bear in a bull costume about these assets, these dog shit assets that they can't sell anywhere else. And they're trying to park them in 401ks before price discovery happens. All right. That is my outlook for what the average person doesn't see coming. I've been trying to warn people about this on this channel for the better part of the last 2 years. But, you know, I'm just a doomer. What do I know? Thank you very much, Armando, for supporting the channel. Greg S. 1969, who's been a Melonhead for 13 months, says, good morning. Well, good morning, Greg. Top of the morning to you, sir. Are we doing this again? Travis is now trying to get the last word in. $2 a pop to get the last word in. I guess that's what we're doing this morning. Thank you, Travis. M&J says, are you, though? Are you really? That's the Thor meme. Is it really, though? Is it? Raiden 57. Thanks, M&J. Raiden says, did Amazon ever get those data centers powered up? I'm not sure which specific Amazon data centers you're talking about. There was two in Santa Clara, California. I remember an article about a month, 2 months ago, about two complete data centers that weren't going to get power until 2028. Those have still not switched on, but they were not Amazon data centers that I'm aware of. I don't know who owned both of those, but Amazon, neither one of them was Amazon. So I'm not sure, did those Amazon data centers ever get powered up? Which ones are we talking about, Raiden? But data centers, that may be a hot topic. If we get widespread power failures over the next few days in this cold spell, could be interesting. Thanks again, Raiden, the God of Thunder. And thank you, Hunt and Cover, who says, Travis, deep pockets, short arms. I like that. I've never heard that before. Deep pockets and short arms. I get the visual there. Thank you, Hunt and Cover, for the generosity, sir, and for supporting the channel. Nacho Man, who also has deep pockets, wants to be last. Thank you, Nacho Man. Crusty White Bread says, get in line for a loaf, plebs. Bread lines are coming back. Hey, Bernie Sanders says bread lines is actually a sign of prosperity. It's a sign that the government cares about their people, right? That's his famous quote during, when he saw Soviet bread lines. That made him feel all warm and fuzzy inside. All right. Good luck with that, Bern. Thanks again, Crusty, for being a melonhead. Lily Von Stoop says, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. Nobody ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. No, indeed. That's Life of Brian. Is that what that was? Or History of the World? I think that was History of the World. Thank you very much, Mr. Von Stoop. M&J741G says, I don't think so. Still fighting for the last word here. Troy Rhodes says, he's last now. Thank you, Troy Rhodes. Thank you, M&J. Nacho Man with the orange escalation says, hitting the nitro. Got to hit those boosters. Thank you, guys. This is hilarious. Troy Rhodes, no more playing games. First, tomorrow morning. All right. And then there's Travis, of course. Thank you, Troy. Travis, last but certainly not least. One more try. Hashtag last. All right. We're going to hit the music and we're going to cut it off. Don't be blown up. Nope, we did. There it is. Stop the music. Stop the music. I was too slow on the draw. Afantastic, which is in a fantastic way to enter the exit the stream, says now AppMex has a $500 limit on online orders, still 10,000 on buybacks. Thank you, Afantastic, for clarifying that. That's a detail I got wrong last week when AppMex put out that $10,000 limit. I didn't read between the lines and realize the $10,000 limit was on what AppMex would buy from people, which, by the way, if they were really desperate for inventory, why would they be turning away purchases? That's interesting. Maybe they're not really desperate for inventory. Maybe they're actually more desperate for cash than they are for inventory. Interesting. Seeing a lot on other channels about coin dealers are not doing so well here, despite the rise in prices. Might drive bullion dealers to do things like start Twitter feeds and not disclose that it's actually sell-side research, or maybe pay to have AI slop videos that convince people to go out and panic buy silver. Interesting. Put a pin in that. But now AppMex has placed a $500 limit on buy orders. If you're going to buy silver, you got to buy at least $500 worth of silver, which, by the way, 6 ounces gets you there, guys. I mean, that's not that tight of a limit, is it? I mean, holy shit, how far have we come? 6 ounces gets you to $500, maybe 5 ounces pretty soon. And actually, yeah, 5 ounces gets you to $500 if you count the premiums they're charging. You know, it's hard to find silver eagles under $100 now. So, yeah. $500 limit on buys. Thank you, Afantastic. Afantastic for clarifying. Thank you guys for arguing and paying me to get a word in every time. I appreciate that very much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm. Thank you so much for the generous super chats and supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous melon heads on YouTube and Patreon to buy me a coffee. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Nacho Man for the win. $2 at the closing bell. Everybody, until next time, live small and dream big. Got you at the bell, Travis. Gotta watch that one every time.